Struck in reel 17. Struck, can we finish the last reel where you were staying in the village very close to where you'd been liberated for 3 days?
For 3 days, yes. Now, I would like to say the only friend that I had then from the post office, because Moniek Glasman died, was Jasza Kryński. And whenever I found some food, I would share with him and he would share with me. But I was always angry with him for two reasons. First of all, that he smoked, that he would always change some of his food for a cigarette. And secondly, he was an exception in the camp. He was a pessimist. Everyone else was optimistic. For example, he would say, I remember 6 months before the end of the war, he would say, after the war things will be bad as well, we will be in another camp and things will not be much better. And the men were furious with him, because to us, after the war, we were convinced life will be, there will be paradise. And I was angry with him because of his pessimistic outlook of what will happen, of what might happen after the war. And therefore, when the war finished and he decided to go, we didn't speak much to each other, and he realized somehow that I didn't want to go with him to Poland or Czechoslovakia or wherever he was going. And he looked at me in a somewhat reproachful way, and we parted. That could have been the 9th or 10th of May. And at that stage, I decided to go with another young man, Zdzisiek. He was half Jewish, he was half Polish. His mother was Polish, and he and his father was Jewish, and he knew that the mother survived because she was somewhere in Lodz, or was likely to have survived. So I decided to go with him back to Poland. And by then, some of the men managed to find a bicycle. There was no public transport, we didn't see any soldiers, neither, and some were saying it's still dangerous to go through the forest because there may be Germans and with guns. But we were not afraid. And the only way to... By then I didn't have any shoes, but my clogs were worn out and I was walking barefoot. But my striped uniform was clean because I boiled it, so I felt a little better. And the only way to go was to walk until you could get a lift or until you found that there was some public transport.
Could you not have got some shoes in the village?
I didn't look for any shoes. I felt by then quite, it was very sunny, 9th, 10th of May, the weather was beautiful, and I found it, and my feet were used to the frost and the sleet and snow and the wet, and somehow I preferred to walk like that. I didn't look for shoes. And we crossed what we didn't realize, that we were very close to the Czech border. And although there was nothing to tell you this is the border, and there were no guards, no one standing there, you knew immediately when you crossed into Czechoslovakia, because the people were speaking Czech, they were greeting you, "S Bohem," means God be with you. And they were happy to see you, and they were inviting you wanted to give you food, and very, very friendly. So it was so lovely to enter Czechoslovakia at that time, and everyone was smiling, everyone was happy. And by then, I found, because there were some other American soldiers sort of passed by in tanks and in lorries, and they threw more Camel cigarettes, and I also found a camera somewhere. So I was walking with the camera, pockets full of Camel cigarettes, and the Czech people would give you food wherever you went.
And then the Czech people not anti-Semitic, or they were anti-German?
Well, I don't know whether they knew, probably, but they were very extremely friendly and very hostile to the Germans, of course, at that point. And then a Czech farmer said, "Come be my guest. There is no transport, no trains are running. I've got a big farm." I was also in Buchenwald. I was a prisoner in Buchenwald. Don't know why and don't know how long. "Be my guest." And there was an empty bungalow. He must have been quite a wealthy farmer, because there was sort of quite big buildings. And there was an empty bungalow. He says, "Stay here as long as you like. I will feed you. Have a good rest until things are easier. You need a rest." And we agreed that this was the right thing to do, because we didn't feel like walking a few hundred miles. We didn't have the strength. And I gave him, he was a smoker, and I gave him the Camel cigarettes, and he was very grateful. It meant to him much more than the food that he was giving us. Then there was a Polish woman who also, he must have found her somewhere, and she also moved in and stayed there as his guest. And she also said she was in some camp. She wasn't Jewish, and she was also going on the back to Poland. And after 3 or 4 days, we felt a little rested and a bit bored. And I said to the farmer, "I'll go back to where the Americans were, those few kilometers, and I'll get some more Camel cigarettes," because by then he finished the few packets. So we set out and we started walking in the direction of where the Americans used to be. When we arrived there, the Russians were there. And my friend Zdzisiek, he was terrified of the Russians, and I was not. The village in Czechoslovakia, where I thought the Americans still were, was called Manetin. And I didn't go back into Germany. It was still on the Czech side. And as we were approaching, suddenly we realized the camp is full of Russian soldiers. He was terrified, but by then it was too late to turn back, and we had to somehow walk into the camp, because the guard stopped us and say, "What do you want?" So I couldn't say to them, I thought, they were Americans and I'm looking for cigarettes. So I said, "Well, we are from the camps and I'm not feeling well," there was some truth in it. "Is there a doctor in the camp whom I could see?" So the guards took us inside, and there were many prisoners. There were German prisoners and there were Russian prisoners of war in the yard, and there was a Russian major, and I approached him. He says, what do you want? So I told him I was in the camps. We are on our way back to Poland. I'm an Evrei. I'm a Jew from Poland. I'm on my way back to Poland. I was in various concentration camps, but I'm not feeling well, and I was wondering if there is a doctor whom I could see. So he sort of smiled for a moment, looked at me, and said, go over there and to sit together with the Russian prisoners of war and the German prisoners of war. And after half an hour, we had to march with the Russian guards on either side, with guns at the ready. So at first I wasn't afraid, and then I looked, who am I, and then there was a difference. We marched now like soldiers. With the Germans we were walking like in a disarray, and we could talk to each other. Normally the Germans didn't mind if we whatever we talked, they couldn't care less. But here, if I tried to talk to my friend, the Russian guard would tell me to keep quiet. So we had to be silent, march in a much more orderly fashion. And the others were all ex-soldiers. There were few Italians, many Germans, and quite a few Russian ex-prisoners of war. And suddenly I'm marching again at the point of a gun without being able to talk and communicate to my friend. And now I was stronger by then because of the food that I had during the past 2 weeks or whatever. I don't remember the exact date, in May. And at first I was not afraid, but later I was sort of looking at the faces of the people that were walking, marching with me. My friend was terrified, Zdzisiek, because some people in Poland were afraid of the Russians because of the propaganda, and I was not. And then I looked at the Germans' faces, and they were terrified. I could see fear in their eyes, and I thought, well, that's understandable. They are prisoners of war. But then when I looked at the Russian prisoners, who were Russians, who were prisoners of war in the German hands, I could see fear in their eyes, and that frightened me. I said, why are they afraid? They have been liberated from the Germans. Why are they afraid now? And that I couldn't understand, what was going on. Behind our column was a horse-driven cart, and on it was a Russian prisoner of war without any legs. He was lying on top of various sacks, and the driver, who was a Russian soldier, and they were chatting. We marched mile after mile after mile in silence, and suddenly I fainted. It could have been the heat, and they took me and they put me on the van together with the Russian without the legs and the driver, and they gave me some water. And I remember when I tried to drink the water, I lost sort of the sensation of feeling the water. Even when I put my hand into the water, I didn't feel the water. So obviously I somehow lost sense of feeling for a little while. And lying on the van and being driven by the horse, I slightly recovered after about an hour, and I listened to the conversation between the two Russians. And then when there was a silence between them, I tried to join in the conversation. And I said, I'm an Evrei from, I'm a Jew from Poland. I was in the ghetto. I was in camps. I was in Buchenwald. Why am I now being taken somewhere? Where are we going? There was a silence for a little while. And then the Russian who was holding the reins, he was an older man, without looking at me, he said, Pachemu cebia nie spalili? Why didn't they burn you? Why did the Germans not burn you? And there was a silence. It wasn't a question, and all kinds of thoughts passed through my mind. First of all, I thought, either he suspects me for collaborating, because they murdered all the Jews, why did they leave me? Then he's probably an anti-Semite, and so on and so on. So from that moment, for the next 2 hours, I didn't say a word to him, and the conversation between him and the soldier who was without the legs also kind of stopped. So we were just going in silence, going on and on. Eventually we arrived at the outskirts of a town, which was Pilsen. I didn't know at the time. And when we were, I felt a little stronger, and I got off the cart, and the captain got out, approached us, and started talking to the guards, kind of what is going on, and the guards were very somewhat afraid of the captain. And he started asking them, where are you going, what are you doing, and so on. And I looked at him, and I realized he was Jewish in a Russian uniform. So I went over to him, and I said to him, why have I been arrested? What's going on? I am a Jew. I was in concentration camps. And he looked at me and he said, speak German, meaning probably speak Yiddish. He didn't want, I didn't understand it then. So I said, I can speak Russian, although my Russian wasn't very good because it was half Polish and half Russian. I said, I don't need to speak German. You can understand what I'm saying and I can understand what you are saying. Why was I arrested? What is happening? I was liberated by you, now I'm being arrested. And I kind of, and he couldn't, he said, don't worry, you will be all right. And I didn't quite realize the situation. And instead of talking to me, he started shouting at the soldiers, Niczego sivodnia nie zdziałali, you haven't achieved anything today, and he started telling them off. But it was kind of an excuse to keep me quiet. And I didn't realize that he was not empowered to kind of release me or anything like that. I probably imagined as a captain he had much more power, but at that time I was in such a state that I wasn't able to think rationally about these things. And half an hour later, they took us into the prison yard
at
Pilsen. Now, it was a big yard, a big prison, and there was a major who was, you could tell whether a captain has 3 stars, a major has 4 stars on his cap. And still being hot, although this could have been 5-6 o'clock in the afternoon. And he first of all, and I could see he was drunk, and all the other Russians, the guards, everyone was drunk, probably on vodka. And he began in the yard to interrogate the Germans. So first of all, the Germans were searched, and if they had a wristwatch, he would take it off and put it on his arms. The result was that he had 20 wristwatches on one arm and half a dozen on the other, and he was with his cap, so you could see he was a major, but he had a white vest and his trousers and boots. And it was obvious, a big man, he was in charge. And the Germans, after being interrogated, and they looked whether they were SS or this, and they took them to the prison inside. Having got rid of all the Germans from our group, he started interrogating the Russians. And then I realized what happened. The question was, why did they capture you? Where were you? Where was the fighting? And invariably, the Russian would try to say, I was injured. So the question was, where are you injured? And even if there was a scar, he would dismiss it as it wasn't severe enough. And they were also taken away, one by one. Then the one without the legs, he patted him on the back and said, Harasho, good, good. In other words, you are excused for having been captured. But virtually none of the others, although you could see scars that healed, it wasn't good enough. The excuse wasn't good enough. So that I understood why they were being arrested and why they were being interrogated. And while this was going on, two Russian women who were there approached us. I was with my friend sitting sort of under a van. There was a horse-driven cart, but without the horse, just standing. And we were kind of sitting on the side because we didn't fit into any of the categories that were being interrogated. And they came close to us, and one of the women said, oh, I was in the camps as well. I was in Auschwitz or somewhere. I don't know the name exactly. And I've seen many people like you being burned. Are you hungry? So I said, yes. So she brought us some soup. And while I was eating, we were eating the soup, I was watching how the Russians were being interrogated. When it was coming a bit closer when I realized that he didn't have many to interrogate, I got up and approached him and I said, I'm a Polish Jew, I was in the camps, I'm on my way to Poland, why am I here? And his eyes kind of, because of the drink and this, that I could see that he didn't know what to answer. And he said, all right, wait over there. He didn't know what to do. Sit over there, I will see to you later. And we went back eating. And in the meantime, they brought another group of prisoners from somewhere else. And I looked at the whole kind of commotion in that big yard, and I could see most of the Russians were drunk. The guards standing near were drunk. Then there were Czech people coming in and out with stretchers, Red Cross stretchers, bringing people in, taking people out. So I turned to Zdzisek and I said, Zdzisek, I'm walking out of here. So he was afraid and he said, they will arrest us, they will this, you know, it's dangerous. I said, I am walking out. If you want to stay here, goodbye. I got up and I walked beside a stretcher. The two men from Red Cross were carrying the stretcher. And I walked next to him and walked out of the gate. And the two guards sort of looked at me in a drunken way. But because of our striped uniforms, it was somehow didn't seem to him unnatural that we were going in and out. And I walked out of the prison gate. I looked back, Zdzisiek was following me. They didn't stop him either. So we joined together, and I said, Zdzisiek, they are not after us. We were taken by mistake, and there is nothing to be afraid of. They are after Germans or Italians, and they are after Russians who might have done something wrong in the war, but we are not in the picture. We were now walking on the streets of Pilsen, and he was still afraid of the Russians, and every time I saw the Russian soldiers pass, I would raise my arms, Zdravstvuyte, you know, greetings.
Did they do that? Was that a known Russian salute?
Yes. Zdravstvuyte, with a clenched fist, yes. And it was quite, yes, it wasn't like in Hitler's Germany when you would be shot for it. It was people were greeting them, they were the liberators, the Czech people liked them. So I just did the same. And two of the soldiers were Jewish, and they came, oh, we saw you in the group. I didn't notice them before. We saw you being led to the prison. I knew you would be left out soon, the Jewish soldier said. I didn't tell them that we just walked out or escaped. But so we just exchanged a few words and we went on. Then we met a group of Jewish girls who were in the camps. And they were from Belgium. And they said, we started talking to them because they recognized, they were in civilian clothes, you know, they had somehow dresses, I don't know how long since they might have been liberated earlier than we were. And they said, oh, there is a train going the following day to Belgium, why don't we join them? So we said, no, we want to go back to Poland. And we walked, we were asking people where there is a hospital. And the only hospital they pointed out to us was a converted school, but they said it's only for Russians, only for Russian soldiers. So I said, well, I want to see a doctor. By then I didn't feel well, I was a bit worried. And I walked into that building, and there were two. The receptionist, first of all, said, no, it's only for Russians. But then I said, can I see a doctor for a few minutes? And two doctors came out, and they were both Jewish doctors from Lviv, which is eastern Poland, the Ukraine. It was part of Poland before the war.